From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel. It's the New York Marathon this weekend, and I'm going to go out on a limb as a sports prognosticator now and say there is a good chance that the winners among both the men and the women on Sunday will be Kenyan. That country produces an apparently endless supply of superlative distance runners. At the recent Berlin Marathon, Kenyan men took the top five places, while Kenyan women came in first, second, and fourth. To explain such startling performances in track and field, we turn to news organizations such as Runner's World and Sports Illustrated and WNYC's Radiolab. Why Radiolab, you ask? Well, for the answer, here are the hosts of that program, Jad Abumrad and Robert Krulwich.
Well, Robert, the answer is quite simply that Jad and I are extraordinarily fast on our feet.
Fast like the wind.
Yeah, and we recently came across a fascinating story about why Kenyans dominate the sport so totally.
We actually heard this one from NPR's East Africa correspondent, Gregory Warner.
Yeah.
All right, so where do we start with this, Greg?
I think we should start in 1968, Summer Olympics in Mexico City.
Mexico City, thankfully a city of peace on the Olympic opening day.
That year, everyone was waiting for the 1500 meter, which pit the world record holding American favorite Jim Ryan against a Kenyan policeman named Kipchoge Keino.
Kip Keino of Kenya, number 5.
And the thing to know about Kip is that just a few days before this matchup, Keino was running another race.
10,000 meters.
And two laps before the finish line, he collapsed. He was raced to the doctor, diagnosed with a gallbladder infection, which is incredibly painful, actually hurts the most when you take deep breaths, like when you're running. And the doctor literally says, if you run any more races, you could die.
Ooh.
But Kip decided to run anyway.
They're off and running. 3 3/4 laps of the stadium.
So Kip starts out, dead last.
Keino running last and then moving up.
By the end of the first lap, he's in third.
Germany second and Kip Keino third.
And in the third lap, he takes the lead.
Here comes Kip Keino.
But that's okay for Jim Ryan, because Jim Ryan is famous for his kick.
Kick? What's a kick?
Kick means that right in the last lap, you give this extra boost. And in the final lap, Jim Ryan makes his kick.
He's closing very rapidly.
Out in front, there's Kip. In pain. He's sort of grimacing, gritting his teeth, lurching forward. And even though pain is shooting through his entire body, amazingly, he does not slow down. Jim Ryan never catches him. And he wins. And on that day in 1968, Kip Keino ushered in an era of Kenyan dominance in the sport of running.
It appears to be the greatest concentration of elite athletic talent ever in any sport anywhere in the world.
David Epstein is senior editor at Sports Illustrated. He wrote a book called The Sports Gene.
In the United States, we think of Kenyans as being good runners, but really it's the Kalenjin.
This particular tribe of Kenyans known as the Kalenjin.
Kalenjin, huh.
Yeah, it's a blanket term for a number of Nandi-speaking tribes living mostly in the highlands of western Kenya. And even though the Kalenjin make up only about 0.06% of the world's population, they dominate most of the world's long-distance races.
If you look at it statistically, it sort of becomes laughable. There are 17 American men in history who have run under 2:10 in the marathon. 17 American men in history. There were 32 Kalenjin who did it in October of 2011.
Really?
Now, there are all sorts of theories about why this is the case, like the fact that the Kalenjin live at altitude, that they have a high-starch diet.
They run to school. This is a very prominent phenomenon. We know that the runners that come from the Kalenjin tribe that become great runners, they're much more likely to have run to and from school.
Then there's a socioeconomic argument that in rural Kenya, the salary of a runner is attractive. $10,000 or $20,000 is seen as something worth striving for. But
there are millions of kids in Kenya who run to and from school.
Or who live at altitude, or who could use $20,000. The problem with all these arguments is they're not specific to the Kalenjin, which left David Epstein, when he was writing his book, with a stickier question. Maybe there's something genetically different about the Kalenjin that makes them superior runners.
I almost backed out of writing the book because I realized I was going to have to address ethnic differences and gender differences.
Now, despite the title of his book, Epstein says there is not a single sports gene that ensures success. But the scientists he talked to did tell him that genetics are important in one particular way.
One aspect of innate biology that clearly helps Kalenjin, that's been studied by scientists is their body build.
The shape of their body.
So the Kalenjin are what's called a Nilotic people. They have ancestry at very low latitude. I was crisscrossing the equator when I was visiting their training camps. And we've known this for over a century. It's called Allen's Rule, that organisms, not just humans, all organisms that evolve in hot and dry climates evolve a certain body type for cooling.
Namely?
Their limbs get thinner the farther away they get from their center of gravity. So they have extremely thin ankles and extremely thin calves, which is particularly important because your leg is like a pendulum. And the more weight you have farther away from your center of gravity, the more difficult it is to swing.
Now, you can find Americans with thin ankles, and you can find Kalenjin with fat ankles. The differences he's talking about are all in averages over populations. But Epstein says that this body type confers such an advantage that if you were to go to the Olympic starting line and you were to measure everybody's ankles and calves, you could predict statistically who's likely to win. It's physics.
I don't know. Somehow, like, to sort of just peg it all on physics smells like an argument that I really don't like.
Yeah. No, nobody likes it.
I don't think it's a question of like or dislike. I think it's just not the reason I watch the Olympics. I mean, many of us, when we're watching great athletic competitions, feel that there's something more than physics going on. We want some room for willpower or
triumph over adversity.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the triumph of the human over everything.
Yes.
Right. I mean, you know, going back to Kip Kano, who overcame a gallbladder infection to break the Olympic world record in 1968, he didn't win because he had thin ankles. He won because of something that scientists haven't found a gene for, a mental ability to persevere through unimaginable pain. And this is where I ran across a completely new, fascinating, and honestly somewhat disturbing way of thinking about why the Kalenjin are so good at this.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
This is John Manners.
John Manners, a semi-retired journalist who for many years had a specialty in covering the exploits of Kenyan runners, African runners in general.
Manners now runs a nonprofit called KenSAP to get Kalenjin kids into Ivy League schools. But when Manners was 12 years old, he lived for a while in Kalenjin country. And as a boy, he would notice that all his friends had these self-inflicted scars.
Marks of having burned their arms and legs with hot coals in order to...
And he soon learned that they were practicing for an initiation ceremony, a rite of passage.
You know you're facing it for 10 years at least.
Because as a Kalenjin teenager, boy or girl, you have to go through an experience which is so painful, it's kind of a theatrical orgy of pain. And it starts with you crawling, mostly naked, through a tunnel of African stinging nettles.
It's a really scalding pain.
So it's just bad.
This is Eli Kipkoge. He's 19 years old. He went through this 4 years ago when he was 15.
There's beatings, all those things.
After the stinging nettles, he was beaten.
This is the position they normally beat, this ankle here.
On the bony part of the ankle. Then his knuckles were squeezed together.
They are pressed. And it's very painful, it's done at night.
Then the formic acid from the stinging nettle was wiped onto his genitals. But all that's just warm-up, because then...
Early in the morning, circumcision.
He was circumcised.
They use a sharp stick. I hope you understand that, a sharp stick.
And here's where we get to the heart of the issue, because while he was being cut, Ellie could not make a sound.
When he undergoes the operation...
This is John Manners again.
He is obliged to be absolutely stoical, still unflinching.
So in some versions of this ceremony, mud is caked on the face and then it's allowed to dry. And if a crack appears in the mud, your cheek may twitch, your forehead may crinkle. And if that happens, you get labeled a kebitet, a coward.
You're not a full man.
Historically, you'd be stigmatized by the whole community.
You don't get... That's the friendship after that.
So you have this enormous social pressure placed on your ability to endure pain. And that's also a key part of being a long-distance runner. It's something that every marathoner or heavy jogger is familiar with. The breathlessness, the needles in your lungs, your muscles seizing up, all these signals from the body to slow down. The best runners have to learn to mentally override these distress signals, to run despite the pain. So Manners argues that this ritual ordeal is actually a kind of training for the track meet.
I think the circumcision, insofar as it teaches kids to be able to withstand pressure and tolerate pain, yes, there's some advantage there.
Is he saying that that's like a cultural learned advantage, or does he actually go so far as to say it might be genetic, like built up over generations?
No, there's certainly no gene for stoicism that's been discovered, and any athletic success has to be ascribed to a host of factors, including body type and diet and socioeconomics. But we do know that the current crop of Kalenjin running stars, both men and women, they all grew up in this pain-embracing society. In fact, pushing through pain is what makes you a man or a woman. When I was talking to Ellie, he said that after he was circumcised, still healing from this operation, he was taken to a hut on the outskirts of the village, and he was told, whenever you leave this hut,
you are not allowed to walk.
You're not allowed to walk.
You're supposed to run, and it's really painful.
Before the circumcision, Ellie was never a runner. Afterwards, when he was done with the initiation and back in high school,
I said, oh, let me give it a try. So I could run and I feel pain, I'm feeling pain, and I wanted to stop. Then I realized, no, let me try to persevere. Let me try one more time. And 2 minutes later, I'm at school.
Now Ellie's one of the fastest guys on his track team,
known as the school athlete,
which in Kalenjin country is pretty fast.
Is that really true?
Yeah, it is true. So probably my ability of running was a bit higher than the rest.
Turns out that Ellie's mom was a semi-famous athlete. And not only that, but she, like many Kalenjin girls, went through a painful initiation rite of her own, one that also demanded stoicism, female genital mutilation. So some Kalenjin might say that Ellie actually got two things from his mom. One was his physical prowess, his speed on the track. The other was a mental ability to persevere through pain.
Yeah, people usually say it's called a blessing. In Kalenjin, you call beruta, the blessing, as they call it.
So they think of it as genetic in some way, like that it's...
Yeah,
that's interesting.
But Ellie takes a different view.
The system is changing from the traditional format to the new format right now.
I mean, he's part of a new generation of Kalenjin. He says for his contemporaries, the pain-free hospital circumcision is becoming slowly less of a stigma.
So my son won't go through the same procedure as I did.
But don't you want your son to be... to have the benefits of what you...
The benefit's only about the perseverance part of it. And I believe perseverance can get through many ways.
He tells himself he's going to be able to pass on those Kalenjin values without resorting to the ancient rituals.
I will teach him how to persevere.
And he thinks his kids will still be able to be champion runners, if that's what they want to be.
Thanks to Gregory Werner, NPR's East Africa correspondent.
And thanks to Jad Abumrad and Robert Krulwich at Radiolab. You can hear the Radiolab version of this story at radiolab.org.